Hello, everyone. Happy Wednesday. It's Big News Wednesday on the Damage Report, and I'm Jessica Burbank filling in for John Iturola here with JR Jackson. How are we doing, JR?
What's going on, Jessica? It's almost like we were just here like 5 minutes ago.
Not only yesterday on the watch list, but we tried it already once this morning. We're going to get it this time, though.
It's Big News Wednesday, though, so there's always something to talk about. I love it.
We have a lot to get into today. Are you ready to get into this first story, JR?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's make it happen.
All right. Let's watch this. All right, so the music's a little dated, but people are tearing them apart, especially Biden for handing that pen over to Joe Manchin, passing it over Senator Schumer. But the Inflation Reduction Act passed. This is big news, and a lot of people are trying to make sense of it, right? Is this a step forward? Is this a step back? I would say it's a step in every direction. It's the cha-cha slide, if we were to put it into words. So let's just briefly chat about what is in this bill. So according to the US Senate's description of the Inflation Reduction Act, the bill will allow Medicare to negotiate for prescription drug prices and extend the expanded Affordable Care Act program for 3 years through 2025. That's a good move. Let's say that's, you know, left foot, left stomp. But now let's take it back now, y'all. Let's talk about how they're reducing the deficit. There's a lot of conversations about this, people praising it like it's a good thing. Let's look at this overview of the spending in the bill. We know that the deficit originally was planned to be reduced by $300 billion. Now it's about $226 billion because Sinema slashed the stock buybacks. So now 226 when you take out that $74 billion. But we shouldn't really be talking about that because reducing the deficit isn't actually necessary, especially when all of these investments have such a high return, especially when you think about renewable energy. After about 10 years, wind turbines pay for themselves. And that's exactly what this is. They're investing in renewable energy. So we shouldn't be so hyper focused on the deficit. That's kind of taking us back. So let's look at other investments in this bill, the IRS. This is a really big one. A lot of people are talking about this. It's causing a lot of drama. But from the Congressional Research Service, they said the IRA would appropriate to the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, and related agencies a total of $79.6 billion to remain available through the end of fiscal year 2031 to bolster taxpayer services and enforce tax code, among other purposes. So we have all of this investment with not exactly clear direction for what it's going towards, but we do have promise from the Biden administration and Janet Yellen with the Treasury that it will not go towards increasing taxes on people earning under $400,000 per year. That's very good. We're also reducing carbon emissions by 40% with this bill and the investments in renewable energy. But this is also tied to gas and oil leasing. And so I would say that's cha-cha real smooth. We're going forwards and backwards with that provision. And Sam Kalin, a natural resources law professor at the University of Wyoming, said that the leasing language is one of the worst policy provisions I've seen. Renewables cannot be tied to leasing fossil fuels as normal. So this bill is all over the place. And I would say it's just like the cha-cha slide, because when the DJ puts it on, am I happy that that's the song we chose? Probably not. No, I'm not very happy about it. But it's better than the music cutting out and it being silent. This bill is better than nothing at all getting done. And it's okay to just be neutral about it, that it's better than nothing, but it's not good or bad, because now that it's not in a clear category, we can actually talk about the substance of it. What is in the bill? But I want people to remember when they look back in history and think of this as the Biden administration getting something big done or Manchin getting something big done. Remember what happened 2 days before Manchin and Schumer released the draft of this bill. This was Senator Schumer's office. It was occupied by organizers who were congressional staffers. They went into his office and they dropped a banner encouraging him to keep climate negotiations open. This is how we should remember the Inflation Reduction Act getting done. But history will try to erase every win that organizing gives us and tell you to remember, you know, Manchin getting this pen passed over and Biden making the silly face when he passes the pen. They'll do anything to make you remember that. But remember that everyday people standing up for the rights and demanding what they want to have happen is the only thing that gets people in power to do what's right by the people in this country. Manchin was just kind of the convenient scapegoat for long enough for why the Democrats weren't doing more about climate. This was just like every other week, except Schumer's office was occupied. So did Manchin kill Biden's agenda? Definitely not. Biden wouldn't be handing the pen over to Manchin if that were the case. And so they're backed with a lot of money. They're very powerful, but the one thing they hate is being uncomfortable. And these workers made them uncomfortable. So let's just remember that this is what can happen if you organize your workplace. Imagine what we could accomplish if we had more organizing just like this. This was about 10 workers, and they got hundreds of billions of dollars of resources moved to get things done. Everyone who works a job in this country plays some key role to keep our economy moving every day. What if you and the workers in your workplace talked about, you know, what do you want to have happen? How do you want your working conditions to change? But also, what do you want your bosses to be doing with the resources and labor that they move? What you'd be asking for by having more of a say in that decision isn't really unreasonable. You're working 5 days a week for over 8 hours per day. You're spending the majority of your waking hours working. You know, I'm sure you've had good ideas about what could change in your workplace. And we value democracy and freedom so much in this country, but for some reason, we only apply that to government and our politics, and it's about time we apply that to our economic system as well. So as much as you can go home and have really strong political views and ideas about what should happen, you should talk to your coworkers, talk about what can change in the workplace, because this is where real substantive change happens in our country. These don't have to be political conversations. You can talk about the issues in the workplace. What are your bosses doing that they shouldn't be doing? And in this case, their bosses were public officials who are supposed to be serving us, the people. You can start these conversations by just keeping it about working conditions or talking about what you'd like to have change in the workplace. It doesn't have to be political. It doesn't have to be, you know, charged with your own language that you use when you talk about politics. It can just be about work. So all of the power is in our hands, and we should remember this moment, not as Manchin getting past that pen, but as these workers who occupied Schumer's office. This was an organizing win. It wasn't the administration waking up one day and deciding to do one thing. So JR, I want to get your thoughts on this. How are you remembering the IRA?
I like your optimism here in Burbank.
Thanks.
That people, because I had one of those moments yesterday that you weren't big on, but listen, comes to those parents at that school. But when it comes to something like this, okay, look, Joe Manchin handed the pen, and in that particular moment, this is when you always have to remember. And by the way, I do enjoy the whole thought process of, yeah, organize at your work, talk about things that are happening. But there's this fear, because look, we've seen it happen with Starbucks, and when supervisors get fired, and then many not even really told a real reason for it, and they have to come up with that conclusion that maybe it's the work I was doing to try and organize and get us better conditions. Things like that are happening, and these CEOs and these corporations are okay with those stories coming out, as bad as they may look, because it still sends out that warning shot. You guys are thinking about this, and any of these other companies and businesses, you might want to think again, because this is the approach that we're taking. And apparently, I think they have free rein to do so. So that's the first part about it. They have to get by that fear. We've been conditioned to think, hey, the only way you can get forward in America or have a happy work life and career is to bow down until someone high enough lets you in. And that's a small window and a very small door that rarely opens for anyone else that's not already there. But when it comes to details about what happened with Joe Manchin, it's always political. Yes, they're all thinking about the election. They wanted us to be talking about the Inflation Reduction Act, the next thing that they're signing, when everyone was talking about Donald Trump's FBI search issues, because they still want to make sure, hey guys, don't forget, you got to vote for us in these midterm elections. And remember, you guys, how much you hated Joe Manchin and how he's derailing Joe Biden's entire agenda, which he was, and in some cases still is. He's got to show me and Joe, we're good. We're good, you guys, calm down. He's okay, I'm okay, help us all out here. That's the message they're always trying to send. And they don't want any of those other potential underlying issues that come with this to be talked about. And the casual voter, the casual citizen is only going to see that moment and not dig into this the way that you have.
Yeah.
Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad.
Yeah, especially the fear part, right? So many people are thinking, oh, well, my boss said I can't have someone get in between me and them because then I'll get punished. And also my benefits are much better when I, you know, work directly with them. The real power of workers is that they're nothing without you. There's no profits, there's no productivity, there's nothing going on without the workers. And so it can be scary. And that's why you've got to organize carefully and make sure that you have a majority of people on board before you decide to take action. But the power really is in your hands. And I bet your bosses are way more afraid of a union and an organized workplace than you are of getting fired. It's got to be a fight. But yeah, Jared, that's a super good point. And it sucks that people will remember this bill as, oh, it's very popular, it's going to reduce inflation, it's doing good stuff for climate, and not really think about the substance of it. Because come midterms, they're going to point to this as one of Joe Biden's big wins and not really even know what it's all about.
And if you're worried about, last thought of this, I'm sorry. If you're worried about the IRS thing and people are concerned because they're coming for you, they've already been coming for you. These are your regular folks. It happens. There were stories about this years ago about how IRS agents and at least the IRS in general, the first folks they come for are not the top, because they've got these teams of attorneys that'll make this a whole situation or even finds the loopholes in any of these laws. But the regular guy who makes a mistake or just doesn't do it or then tries maybe something nefarious, oh boy, they got you. And that's where the energy and the money and the attention goes. If the attention does get spread to other folks, great. But the thing is, we just don't know. But yeah, they've already got us. It's not like there's nothing going to change for the regular common folk that's not the multimillionaire.
Ridiculous. We had Ted Cruz on Fox saying there's going to be IRS agents swarming the streets, knocking on your door. Uncle Sam's going to come with his, I don't know, gun and ask you for your taxes. No, that's not what's been going on. There was ProPublica that published that huge report on how it's too expensive for the IRS to actually audit the wealthy, and that's why they're focused on lower earners. So that's why it's super important that we had Janet Yellen and Biden saying this cannot go towards raising taxes or tax enforcement on people earning $400,000. That's a very clear part of this bill. But it's pretty open-ended what's going to happen with the new IRS agents and all of that money. And as someone who studied policy in graduate school, this is a dream for me. I have so many ideas about what to do with all of that manpower in the IRS.
Maybe they can toss some money your way and you can consult them on this.
Yes, yeah, that'd be great.
They got several billion to work with, so maybe they can spare a little.
Yeah, I have some ideas. I'm full of ideas for what to do with all of that. All right, we got to take our first break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Damage Report. It's Jessica Burbank and JR Jackson for Big News Wednesday. JR, are you ready for this next story?
Absolutely, let's make it happen.
All right, let's watch this.
Are you thinking about running for president? That's a decision that I'm going to make in the coming months, Savannah. I'm not going to make any announcements here this morning, but it is something that I'm thinking about, and I'll make a decision in the coming months.
All right, so let's talk about Liz Cheney getting defeated last night in Wyoming. You know, she was defeated in the Senate. She was chair of the January 6th committee. A lot of people are talking about what this means. Politically for the GOP, she was defeated by Hageman by about 30 percentage points or more. We don't have the exact final numbers. The race has been called, but this is a really significant margin. She was seeking a fourth term and she was defeated by Harriet Hageman, an attorney and former Cheney supporter who Trump selected last year as the chosen candidate to oppose her. In 2016, Hageman, this candidate who now won and is going on to the general for Liz Cheney's seat, called Mr. Trump racist and xenophobic and tried to block his path to the GOP presidential nomination. But like many Republicans, Ms. Hageman has since fallen in line and declared Mr. Trump the greatest president of my lifetime. Amazing change of tune there from Hageman. So we have a quote from Politico. Cheney's race was the last outstanding primary race of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach Trump over his role in the January 6th assault. Only 6 of those members sought re-election, and just 2 won their primary races and advanced to their general election. California's David Villado, who is in a swing district, and Washington's Dan Newhouse. Okay, so things are changing. There's a big shakeup within the GOP. And Fox News coverage of this has been creating this alternate narrative around Liz Cheney. Let's look at this tweet from Matthew Gertz. He wrote, Fox News, which championed Trump's big lie and created an alternate narrative in which the insurrectionists were the victims, was overjoyed about Liz Cheney's primary defeat last night. So things are shifting in American politics. I mean, I think a lot about how Dick Cheney has been extremely quiet. That suggests to me that it's very likely that Liz Cheney is considering running for president. When JR and I were talking about this yesterday, we were talking about how it's taking a page out of the Democrats' playbook to lose for a lower office and then end up running for a higher office than the one you lost for. But let's keep in mind that Wyoming is a state that voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. It's really tough turf for someone who's a more centrist Republican. So I'm not sure how much we can extrapolate from this about what it means for the future of the Democratic Party, because we have to keep in mind what's going on specifically where Liz Cheney was running. But JR, what are your thoughts on her defeat?
Yeah, isn't it sad though that you point out there, which I didn't realize this part, Harriet Hageman was a supporter of Liz Cheney's before she had this opportunity to then oppose her, because Donald Trump said, I need someone, anyone that can speak the English language and that's angry enough and can regurgitate these lies. She stood up, she goes, policy, agenda, actually something that we say we want to do for the American people. Those things I said I supported about Liz Cheney, those are out the window, because it's not about policy. It's not about what you can do for the American people. It has nothing to do with which person it is, as long as you insert the right person to then carry out the actual agenda of the party. And currently, the Republican Party's agenda is to protect and promote Donald Trump at any and all costs, at your own cost as well, at the cost of your own career, which we've seen a few others deal with that weren't expecting it. Now, in this case, this aspect of Liz Cheney's career is lost because of this entire thing. But in reality, the only thing you need to get Donald Trump's support is to say, yes, you actually did win that 2020 election. All of these things that are investigations and FBI searches about you are absolute craziness. I can't believe they're doing this to you. There's an assault on the American people. It's easy to say these things. You don't have to have any policies or any kind of principles to do it. You just have to say it. And Harriet Hageman has been rewarded for that. Again, it's a party that, and I think Liz Cheney didn't point this out afterwards. We're going to get to her potential future plans. But she pointed out afterwards that this is a sad state of her party. And look where we are now. They don't really care. That's what they're looking for. The point of this is to be a football game. Hey, you offended me. Did you score a touchdown on me with all that information that you've been a part of revealing to the American people? I got to score back on you. It's not an even score. We still see everything about Donald Trump. It's just a matter of whether or not his supporters are going to continue to just ignore the facts and go with whatever he says. From the looks of this race last night, that's where this is going.
Yep. It shows how transactional these people are. If they were running with a foundation of values and wanting to get things done for the country, it wouldn't be, oh, I'm going to criticize Donald Trump, I'm going to side with Liz Cheney. But as soon as there's an opportunity for this seat in Congress, in the House of Representatives, I think I said Senate earlier, Liz Cheney's in the House. As soon as that seat's open, you're going to go for it and completely flip-flop on where your alignments were before, just because you want political power. That's what works for you. This is not just the Republican Party, but so many people in politics right now. What we really need is more people with values. And I don't mean people with the kind of values that Liz Cheney has. I mean people who actually want to govern on behalf of the people. Let's keep in mind that Liz Cheney's voting record has been pointed out to be about 93% aligned with Donald Trump. So while she says different things, is her stance really that materially different from members of the far right in the GOP? Probably not, which makes her running for president kind of a scary prospect.
I don't want to completely write off the things that Liz Cheney at least has done in this situation. She knew she was going to lose her seat because of this, because of her participation in the January 6th committee that's exposing all this. But maybe that 7% of her difference between Donald Trump and her voting record, it entails things like continuing to not allow a lawless, corrupt former president to run roughshod over all of democracy. And the fact that that's something that gets you kicked out of the party, and then maybe the only thing left for you is this presidential run. Sadly, the people that are going to help her, and I don't know where it's going to land, is the MSNBCs, the CNNs, and I guess general national ABC, NBC, and NBC normal news that you'll see the nightly news talk about. Because she's a big name, and people will forget. I remember that Cheney name in the White House, but they forget why they remember that Cheney name in the White House. I think it's going to work to a degree. I don't think she's going to make it as far as she hopes, or maybe it'll be a couple cycles of this. But this definitely looks like the next step for her. She kind of teased it. Let's keep it real.
Yeah, absolutely. She said in her concession speech, Lincoln was defeated in elections for the Senate and House before he won the most important election of all. Okay, this is someone with huge political aspirations, but let's keep in mind a lot of people who are analysts on MSNBC and CNBC are people who had political aspirations as well. But they're super disconnected from the public. They have no idea what the people want. And so, of course, let's just give them a voice in media instead. Sounds perfectly fine to me. It's par for the course for American politics.
I'm trying to think of the Missouri politician. She's a Democrat. She's super establishment. She lost, and now she's on MSNBC. I've been trying to remember it all morning, and I can't even look her up because I'm trying to remember her name. But she was one of the ones who was pushing all the normal establishment policies, and people floated once she loses, she's going to go. Claire McCaskill. She's going to go end up on MSNBC, and look at her on MSNBC. I don't know if that's the, it's, Liz Cheney doesn't seem like that type of former politician if she goes that route. But there's always those opportunities are always lined up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now Jen Psaki taking the similar course as well, right? This was someone who was supposed to be telling the story of the Biden administration to reporters. I will never forget how she reported on the early days of the war in Ukraine when we had so many members of the press asking about a no-fly zone, her ambiguous responses. She dealt with some of it kind of well. But let's keep in mind that the role of the American media for so long has been to bolster support for US interventions abroad. So it's super concerning when you have people who are really good at towing that line and giving careful messages than going into media. Also, not to mention what she knows about what's going on in the White House. Nurses are on strike in Minnesota. So members of a major Minnesota nurses union have said they favor going on strike if negotiations don't resolve differences with management of several health systems in the Twin Cities and Duluth. So there are around 15,000 members of the Minnesota Nurses Association that cast ballots on Mondays whether to authorize a strike. With the union announcing late Monday night that its members voted overwhelmingly in favor, the vote sets up another phase in negotiations that go back to last March, according to the union. The disagreements appear to be over staffing levels, working conditions, and paid family leave. So hospital executives with million-dollar salaries have created a crisis of retention and care in our healthcare system. This is coming from the president of the Minnesota Workers or Nurses Association, Mary Turner. She said, as more nurses are leaving the bedside, putting quality patient care at risk, nurses do not take this decision lightly, but we are determined to take a stand at the bargaining table and on the sidewalk if necessary to put patients before profits in our hospitals. So this is a huge undertaking by the nurses. This is not just people at work striking about their own working conditions, about their wages, about the resources they have at work or long hours. These are nurses saying we've got to change the way we do things because we are not taking care of people. And that's what we want our job to be. That's why we became nurses. Not so different from what we were just talking about in this last story about the people in Congress who are workers in Congress putting pressure on their bosses to actually use their work and their resources to do things that they agree with more so that they have more say about what's going on in their workplace. But this strike vote covers nurses working at 15 hospitals under 7 hospital systems. We've got a list of those hospitals that you can look at above. You can see for these CEOs' compensations, these CEOs are making a ton of money. $3.5 million, $2.69 million, $2.4 million. And to the right, a pay ratio to the average registered nurse. At the first hospital, 40-1. The second two hospitals, 38-1. And at Methodist, 28-1. So a huge pay differential. A comparison of some of the hospitals included in the Minnesota Nurses Association press release. So nurses are saying that hospitals are dangerously understaffed, leading to more patient injuries like bed sores and falls. Turner, the president of the union, pointed out a recent report from the Minnesota Department of Health that shows adverse health effects were up 33% in 2021 from 2020. Last year, nurses filed 8,000 reports of unsafe staffing levels, an increase of 300% from 2014. Nurses filed the reports when they fear low staffing levels could lead to patient injuries, which also jeopardize nurses' licenses if they're found to be at fault. So they're striking for very good reasons, reasons beyond their own self-interest. They care a lot about these patients, and it sucks that it's the workers that are paid far less than the CEOs that are taking on this burden of saving patients' lives and saving people whose care should be under the owners of the hospitals. This is a consequence of having a profit-driven healthcare system, and thank God these nurses are standing up. We all stand to benefit from this. JR, what are your thoughts?
It's tough, man. It's one of those occupations where it's hard to take that time to then get the right representation, or at least get the right kind of working conditions when things are unfair like this. Because of course, there's potential people who then pay the consequences, which is why it's such a big deal if they do, because it has to happen. Something has to move here, because are we just going to openly not care about some of these patients? But the problem is already, it already seems that's a big issue, which leads to something like this. Where do you turn? And also, how many people would look and go, how dare these nurses turn their backs on their patients? I remember during COVID, during 2020, I believe it was up in Maine, there was a group of nurses that were looking to strike or walk away from their patients because they were against the vaccines, or at least the type of masking and care that they're supposed to go and approach this type of thing. And I think that failed to a degree, because they were talking about it, they were rallying it, but they didn't end up doing it. And people were against that move. So to what degree, I wonder, people are going, oh, nurses make just enough, they're fine. Oh yes, that's a CEO, he's supposed to make $3.69 million every year while nurses are in certain conditions and maybe don't get the fair amount there, or at least have a situation where there's enough people there. And again, it goes right back on them again, as far as who's accused or who's at fault when something does happen because of something that's outside of their control. And I know these strikes have happened. We talked about it earlier just now, when you want people to organize at work. And this is the scary part. Once you organize, you may get a voice. You're going to hear what's happening, but they're going to come at you hard, man. And then we wonder, someone says, I'm not going to go to the hospital and deal with these nurses. Now look at they're turning on us. No, they're trying to actually give you a better situation where you can have some care. But it takes multiple deep talk to talk about this, which sadly, a lot of these folks in power know people don't have time to talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one thing to point out all of this and say, look at what's going on. But all it takes is one trip to the hospital for people to realize that this is going on everywhere. This is not a problem unique to Minnesota. And when you think about the problem of these hospitals being understaffed, and you look at the pay ratio, okay, 40-1, $3.5 million for the CEO. If the problem is that you're understaffed, let's put the CEO at a nurse's salary, or even the pay of two nurses, right? Now we have 38 new nurses and we still have the CEO. Seems like a fine solution to me. I don't know. The numbers really speak for themselves there. The problem solved. This is really an example of something that is a trend in our country right now. So this strike vote is a part of a trend of workers striking around the country, from Starbucks workers to strippers in Los Angeles. But it's also a trend among nurses across the country. In Michigan, roughly 6,200 Michigan medicine nurses are determined to carry out a struggle against the university hospital system for safe staffing levels, higher wages, benefits, and workplace safety. In California, 2,000 Kaiser Permanente mental health therapists are set to go on their first first indefinite strike ever starting on Monday. The contracts for tens of thousands of Kaiser nurses and other healthcare workers have expired or are about to. And in Buffalo, New York, the Communications Workers of America and the Service Employees International Union Local 1199 have called a one-day informational picket at two hospitals on Tuesday. The unions have kept 7,000 nurses on their job through contract extensions and other stalling. So this is happening across the country, and it's really important to point out that yes, workers walking off their job might inconvenience you. You might say, well, what happens if I have an emergency and I need to go to the hospital and the workers are striking? But in the long run, everyone really stands to benefit. We have data from the Department of Health and Human Services that prior to last year, the uninsured rate had consistently remained in the double digits for decades. The number of uninsured Americans began dropping after the ACA, which expanded Medicaid and offers health insurance to people who lack job-based coverage through a mix of subsidized private plans. And this was enacted in 2010. Roughly 26 million people remain without health insurance in the United States. That's the latest numbers from Health and Human Services. And right now we're still facing multiple pandemics, polio, COVID, and monkeypox. We really need strong healthcare systems right now. COVID cases, the daily average right now is still around 100,000 cases. We're still experiencing 415 deaths per day, 5,837 new admissions to hospitals for COVID. Polio also is back.
Back.
It's terrifying, terrifying. The New York City Health Department and the New York State Department of Health have identified poliovirus in sewage, and this suggests local transmission of the virus. They test the sewage to see the prevalence of the virus in the area, and they found it in the sewage there. Let's also just quickly take a look at this map about monkeypox. There are 12,689 total confirmed cases of monkeypox throughout the country, concentrated in those darker areas on that map. So it's good that the nurses are striking right now, because it's looking like we're going to need to rely on our healthcare system in the United States more intensely. And it needs to be better equipped to serve the people in this country. JR, any last thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is my last thought on this. At some point, think about this wild scenario where CEOs can get paid this much, these millions of dollars, and the basis for their success in a company is not necessarily how much it brings back into themselves and the shareholders, but maybe the retention of good employees, maybe the happiness of employees. That should be the gauge, and it shouldn't seem like a crazy thing that, hey, this particular CEO is the best in the country. Look at how happy his employees are. Look at how much they want to stay. Look at how much money they make. Because it should be attractive to want to work for someone, because then if you have better workers for you, you would think your business does better. And at the end of it all, you then do make more money.
It's wow, like
they want to skip all those other steps.
JR, you're sounding like a radical right now. I don't know.
Don't let anyone know.
We're going to go to this next break, and we'll be reading some member comments. We'll be right back after this. All right, we're back on the Damage Report. We've got some interesting news again out of the race between Fetterman and Oz. Oz is again making a fool of himself. Let's watch this.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Honored to meet you as well.
I wanted to ask you real quickly, how many houses do you own?
I own two houses, but one of them we're building on. The other ones I rent.
Right, and one of them is the one that you married your wife in, correctly?
Yes. I'm renting that for my mother-in-law. We're building the house next to it.
Oh, gotcha. That's very cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Once again.
How many people can be asked? How many houses do you own? And be like, well, one of them, I got married in, and the other one. All right, so let's break it down. How many houses does Dr. Oz actually have? We have some really good reporting from the Daily Beast on this. According to public records, Oz owns 10 properties, a 9,000 square foot mansion in New Jersey, a 7,000 square foot country house in Pennsylvania, a condo in New Jersey, a piece of residential estate in Turkey, another piece of residential real estate in Turkey, a Manhattan condo, another Manhattan condo, an Oceanside mansion in Palm Beach, Florida, a cattle farm in Florida, and a piece of residential property, again in Turkey, which appears to be used as a student dormitory. All right, so he's a bit of a landlord. I cannot imagine running for office and thinking that you can represent everyday people in this country and understand their issues when you have over 10 properties. It is insane. More from the Daily Beast. While Dr. Oz does rent out some of these properties, he is not renting them from others. He owns them legally and legitimately, and they make up a sizable portion of his assets, which total at least $100 million. Asked by the Daily Beast directly how many homes Dr. Oz owns, the Oz campaign did not respond. So they tried to get a clear answer out of him and give him a chance to tell the truth about this. But instead, he's really squirrely about it. So not a very relatable guy, doesn't really understand our problems. I can't imagine having more than one house, two, let alone 10, and houses that are this big. He's really disconnected from the electorate. And I think that's the main thing we should be taking away from this. There's some data from Harvard University. They do this annual report on housing and the state of housing in the United States, and things are looking pretty bleak. Let's contrast this with Dr. Oz's housing situation. In 2020, 30% of all households had unaffordable rent or mortgage payments, defined as exceeding 30% of monthly household income. This is up 1.5 percentage points from 2019. More than 1 in 7 households paid over half of their income on housing. Cost burdens rose most for those earning between $30,000 and $45,000, an increase of 4.2 percentage points, and for Black households up to 2.4 percentage points. The data in that example came from the Habitat for Humanity, who does a lot of good work on housing. But it's important to also point out the deficit of homes. The United States now has a deficit of 3.8 million homes, with the greatest supply shortages at low-income price points. The homeownership gap between Black and white households remains at 28.7 percentage points, the largest disparity for any racial or ethnic group. So when we look at housing directly, it's pretty clear that Dr. Oz is living in an entirely different world from the people he hopes to represent. But let's talk about just income inequality more generally to really, you know, paint this picture. This data comes from Oxfam, which does really good reporting on inequality. This comes from their Inequality Kills report. The wealth of the 10 richest men has doubled, while the incomes of 99% of humanity are worse off because of COVID-19. So this is just a shift from March 2020 to December or November of 2021. Inequality contributes to the death of at least one person every 4 seconds. Again, really good data coming out of Oxfam. More quantifying economic inequality, 252 men. So a handful of men have more wealth than all 1 billion women and girls in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean combined. Since 1995, the top 1% have captured nearly 20 times more of global wealth than the bottom 50% of humanity. And so we're kind of living in this situation where we're told that the reason there's not housing for everyone is because resources are scarce. There's too many people, not enough stuff to go around. As we've just demonstrated with that, really clearly not the case. So we've got this illusion of scarcity. It's not very real. Food is wasted tremendously in the United States. People are going hungry. Each year, 108 billion pounds of food is wasted in the US, which equates to 150 billion meals and more than $408 billion of food thrown away each year. Shockingly, nearly 40% of all food in America is wasted. These are very real problems regarding our material conditions. And Dr. Oz is in the camp of being one of those people that is hoarding the resources that's being taken away from everyone else. How can we possibly imagine someone like this can represent people, as the governor of a state or in the US Senate in any public office, but of course running against Fetterman in the US Senate right now? I would take Fetterman over this guy any day.
Jared, Fetterman has been going after this guy for his wealth and his tons of houses and the way he approaches life and his reasoning for maybe even wanting to run for office. And Of course, a lot of times the answer when it comes from Americans is, why are you guys demonizing the rich? Hey, don't you want to be like him? Don't you want this American dream of owning 10 houses and you're not really sure when someone asks you? And your answer is, well, legitimately, how do you legitimately own a couple of houses? Are the rest of them illegitimately owned? No, he's just trying to find a way to skirt around the issue, obviously. But their mindset stops right there with, they're just coming to call out how many I have so people can be jealous of me and then mad about the situation I'm in and they want to be there too. You owning 10 houses detaches you so far from other folks. And as you hoard up more of it and then rent it out, and then 12 other people in the world are just like you, and you hoard this much of it. It's not just because we're mad you're hoarding it. We're mad because then you raise that level so much that that American dream that we're all talking about is harder to attain. And then once people are working for you, and then as we saw with some of these, even when it comes to nurses, but employees of these corporations get treated badly and don't have the opportunity to even get to anywhere near that point of owning these types of things, that's not jealousy. That's calling out that this game is rigged against so many people. But the folks running it, they're so trapped in their bubble, they have no idea. Well, many do. No idea how their life then affects everyone else's. As you point out, people just die at this exorbitant rate just because of this type of equality when it comes to housing, to healthcare, to food availability. And then when you do have availability of some of this food, it's not good. Or you live in certain areas that are dangerous where the air quality is bad and the water quality is horrible. We saw what happened up in Flint for so many years. This type of stuff is they're detached from. So when climate change kicks in, and it already is, we're seeing some results of that, they don't see those consequences. So why would they care? It's just human nature.
Yeah, growing up, it was like, oh, if you work hard, you'll do really well in this country. Okay, no one works for $100 million. You don't get $100 million on wages or working super hard for a salary. You get that kind of money, Dr. Oz, pushing products for corporations, doing huge plugs for them on his channel, saying buy this supplement. He made a ton of money off of that. You make money off of investments, off of being a landlord, buying houses and then renting it out to other people. It's not like Dr. Oz is rolling up his sleeves and getting his hands dirty and working super hard for this stuff. And you can tell that he's guilty about it. If he had no problem with how he got the money to buy those homes, it would have been like, yeah, man, got 10 homes, worked really hard for it. No, instead he gets a little bit nervous and he's like, well, technically one of them was a rental property and also I got married in one of them, talking about anything else to change the subject. He knows exactly the positions that he's in and he wants to distract people from it. It's indefensible at this point and it seems like he knows this.
He definitely knows it. But again, I wonder if he knows why. This is why when you're detached from society, you don't know how much, and when he went to that grocery store, how much salsa costs, or he's acting like he's surprised at the price of salsa. That's one of those, again, reaches for it. Chill out, Dr. Oz. Go stay in one of the 9 to 10 houses. Relax. They can't chill out. Just sit back. What else, what more does he want?
Yeah, you can't say all the left is talking about in this race is memes on Twitter. We're talking about the substantive difference between these two candidates and how well they can represent the people of Pennsylvania. And on the salsa front, I mean, JR, have you seen tortillas recently? They're shrinking in size. Salsa prices are going up.
It's a crisis.
It's a huge problem. All right, so that ends the show. If you're on our linear services, thanks for tuning in. But if you're a member, stick and stay. We've got more for you right on this other side.
The Dragon Squad. I'm curious. I'm sorry, Jess.
Sure,
the Dragon Squad. I'm curious if you guys really know the details of the cha-cha slide and why that was a good analogy.
Yeah. Did everyone understand the cha-cha slide?
They gotta let me know because I didn't think they did, but maybe.
That's too bad. All right. So I have a quick announcement. We have Unbossed with Nina Turner coming up on October 17th on TYT. What Senator Turner is going to do is expose corrupt forces that keep power from the people and talk about what we can do to fix that corruption. So tune in daily starting October 17th. But in the meantime, make sure you are subscribed. You can subscribe with the short link that is on the screen. It's really important to make sure that the show ends up having a strong start. So we're really excited to have
Senator
on the network.
So awesome.
I'm really excited. JR, you know, Watchlist has some competition with Senator Nina Turner coming on the show.
I'm gonna go ahead and squash all of it because she's coming on the show before she does start up her new show. We're gonna discuss it all and make sure that you know, the most popular person now is not gonna take off maybe I'll grab a bit of her coattails and take off with her. We'll make sure that it works out. Good. Love Nina Turner.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited. I haven't seen her since Iowa. All right, we have some other announcements. Watchlist, JR is here with us. Make sure you're watching the Watchlist. Join JR live weekdays 12 Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific, youtube.com/watchlist. Sophie's grabbing some member comments. We're gonna get to those, but a couple more announcements in the meantime. Go to aspiration.com/TYT. Open an account to make an impact and decrease your carbon footprint, and then keep track of your progress using the Aspiration app. There's some more information about Aspiration and tracking your carbon footprint at the Young Turks Instagram page. That account is the Young Turks on Instagram. So coming up, we also have Indisputable next, and make sure you're shopping TYT. So Moonchild Dragon says, thanks for 3 months with the Dragon Squad. Look forward to many more. John, Jessica, JR and company. The beautiful alliteration of John, Jessica and JR. We love to see it. My son, this is coming from Mama Bear Dragon. My son has Lego people that we play with. One guy in a white cowboy hat lost a leg. He is one leg Larry now. Made him a wheelchair, being inclusive. That's amazing. Now Larry can get around.
Which story was that about?
I'm not sure what this was in reference to. The nurses striking, maybe. They would love to take care of Lego Larry and give him a wheelchair, but they can't because they're understaffed. And thanks to Kide, who gifted 5 damage report memberships. Thank you. You can gift memberships now. We also got some super chats and YouTube comments from Nina Kay, who said, well, I will take the time to remind everyone of women rights issue. Please vote blue for our health rights. God bless the USA. All right, yeah, healthcare rights are under attack in this country. People want us to be voting for the people who will protect them. That makes sense to me.
How much are people gonna forget by midterms? Because they said there's a fire that's burning in the belly of libs because of what's going on with Roe versus Wade. We got another couple months. Are we still talking about it? We'll see.
Plenty of time for this momentum to die, unfortunately. Plenty of time, but
we'll bring it back.
We got super chats reminding people. All right, Kevin said there was so much fear in Biden's eyes as he handed off that pen, like when Cisco handed off that fake data rod to the Roman senator in DS9. I don't understand that.
I say I was hoping that you knew what DS9 was.
Not me.
The Dragon Squad is here. John
would understand that. All right, we've got hello, you two lovely people. Hello to the people in the chat. Best tag team on TYT again. Jessica, you're doing great. By the way, love your blues playlist on Spotify. Found some gems I've never heard before. People keep saying we're the best duo, JR.
There was so far one tag team name. I was about to get offended until they clarified.
Uh-oh.
Beauty and the Beast, remember that one?
Oh God, yeah, that was good. But they said you're the beauty and I was
Jared, it was problematic until the clarification.
Yes, there we go. I like that take, the take that, yes, it's reversed. All right, let's go back. We're gonna get into some more stories. We'll see you, we have one more minute, amazing. Yeah. So let's get to some more comments. Will Biden, this is a good one from Anna. Will Biden ever do anything with student loan debt? Considering repayment starts in 2 weeks. Doubtful, I suppose. Oh. So I did see that he is canceling some student loan debt for people in ITT. Very specific. He's really chopping this up into piecemeal, and student loan debt cancellation is not really something that you can means test. It's already the case that people who couldn't afford college are the people who took on student loan debt. So come on, it's got to be a cancellation for everything. I would like to see some more momentum around this. There are some really good organizers that have been, you know, doing demonstrations in front of the Treasury and things like that. I think you're absolutely right to point this out. We need to see something happen because people aren't ready for the payments to start in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.